Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
All right, guys, welcome to the Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas, and today I have with me three incredible authors. I have Miss Julie Gunn, Rachel Esterline, and Michelle Kwasniewski. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hey, thanks for having us.
This is so exciting. So this is one of our many episodes for Indie Talk in the month of July. We are dedicating the month of July, even though I know April is normally Indie Author Month. We're making it July now for this year, but next year we'll do it in April. So happy Indie Month from the Goodish Girls. We are here to celebrate you guys and talk a little bit about your stories, what it is like to be an indie author, the highs and lows of being an indie author, and some other things that maybe can help people in the bookish community who are wanting to become indie authors, because I'm not an author. I am learning so much from each and every Indie Talk episode that we do, but it is a journey and it is a wild thing. And everyone's story is incredibly different than the next person's. So I want to start kind of at the beginning. I would like to hear a little bit more about your guys's book, but I also would like to hear something fun that is in your book that readers maybe won't totally get until they're actually in the story itself, like an aha moment if you guys have it. So, Julia, you have Maladaptive, which is one of the coolest theory books I think I've ever heard in my life. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So, Maladaptive is about a woman who's been daydreaming about this life where she's married to a famous actor. All been there, right? And then she meets him in real life and he recognizes her. It's magical realism, romance, but it's very much also about a journey of a neurodivergent woman and finding herself and giving space to be the priority in her own life. I'm really glad that people are kind of getting it. Even neurotypical people seem to be getting it. And yeah, it's a little bit about the book.
I love that. And is there some sort of like Easter egg or something fun about your book or that's in your book that maybe readers won't totally get until they actually have dove into the story?
There is a plot twist. I don't want to go into it, but, start reading it and you might not see it coming. There are a few Easter eggs also about who inspired the celebrity in the book. So some people try to find out and will DM me, is this the actor who inspired you?
Oh, that's so cute.
I throw a few Easter eggs in there.
Okay, well, I'll be sending you my guesses.
Okay.
Give me time. I'm going to send you who I think that they are. We'll see if I'm right. Rachel, you have Reaper and the Lioness, which is incredible. Tell us a little bit about your story.
So Reaper and the Lioness is a motorcycle club romance, which is super niche. And it's about Eva, who is a PR consultant hired to represent the Lone Star Mavericks Motorcycle Club. And she becomes involved with the vice president of the club, who does not want her involved in doing PR for the club at all. And what I hear from people is that Eva is the strongest female character they've ever read in a book. And I hear that from readers all the time. So I think as you're reading it, that's something to look out for. Because it's really a story of her getting retribution and her finding justice in a world that's really not just. And so I really make all of my FMCs really strong. And I heard an interview once with Reese Witherspoon, where she said there's always this moment in stories where the woman says, what do we do now? And I do not have that in any of my books. The women know what to do. They are the ones who are making the calls. and really taking action. And that's really intentional with the stories that I tell. So I have an interconnected standalone series. So it starts with Reaper and the Lioness, but then we have Damascus and the Wildfire, and then Hatchet and the Hellcat comes out on June 20th.
I have also heard that interview from Reese, and I feel like that was such a pivotal moment when she brought that up, because it is so true, right? We're used to saying, my gosh, what do I do now? Or we look around to see if there is like a man that can help, or, you know, someone that is maybe stronger than us. But there really doesn't need to be. It's not necessary. We do know what to do. We're very smart and capable women. And I love that you are putting those type of FMs forward where they are just strong. They don't have to. I mean, it's not bad that a lot of our FMCs, you know, in romantasy and in these different types of genres and worlds that we go through where they do have to struggle to then learn who they are and then become strong. That's, I think that's definitely okay. But I love that our FMCs and your world are starting strong. Like, they didn't need to go through any of these trials and tribulations. They just are like, nope, this is what I'm doing. And I know. Yeah. And now we're moving forward. So there's room for other parts of the plot. And also, I just entered my like MC motorcycle club romance journeys. So I've just finished a different one and I'm in yours. So again, I'm not done. So I'm not doing any spoilers. But I didn't realize how much I would love like the MC motorcycle kind of thing. So I'm having a really good time.
That's
it's
awesome
really
to
fun.
Hear. It's an addiction. You know, I apologize for getting you addicted to morally gray tattooed bikers.
Worst addiction ever. So, Michelle, I'd like to kind of move over to your series. Your series was very interesting, and it caught my eye when you had reached out to be a part of Indie Talk. So tell us a little bit about Rising Star and Danny Trueheart and kind of what is going on with that.
So the series comes from my career. I used to work in television and film. And so it's a series about Danny Trueheart. The first book starts out when she's 15, and she basically lands a recording contract and rockets up to Taylor Swift level of fame. But it really is more about, not about her career, but about her journey as a teen navigating this industry that is really meant for adults because, you know, contracts and, you know, long hours and everything you're doing, you're putting out there, not just to entertain, but it's a reflection of you, right? So it is a clean read series, but it really shines a spotlight on the dark shadows that linger in Hollywood and really how it can affect a teen's development into adulthood. And the question I get asked most often, is it based on any one particular starlet or pop singer? No, but when I wrote it, I started it in the early 2012, there were a lot of young singers as well as just celebrities and teens who were just doing all kinds of crazy shenanigans. And it was a combination of a lot of those young women, a lot of money, a lot of fame, a lot of paparazzi, and really weren't making the right choices all the time. And I was wondering, well, how did that happen? Were their parents not involved? Did they not know any better? Was it just the headiness of like having all the flashes in their face? So this is what that series looks like. And it's a really short series. All the books are written as a standalone, so you can start at any point during Danny's journey to fame. Rising Star is the first book. Burning Bright is the second book. She's on tour at 16. Falling Star, she's 17. She's back in LA and dealing with the positives and negatives of all of the choices she's made since she started her career.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, and in that book, again, we're not doing spoilers, but when you're talking about like, you know, did the parents know? Did they not know? Danny's mom, that's a big part of her story.
She is a big part of her story. And originally when the book had been written, I had all the adult narratives, the teen narratives, and my agent, I was trying to find an agent, and one of them who didn't pick me up said, just take it all the adults. I just want to know about Danny. And that was great. So even though I had all that backstory that didn't make it in, it still like made Jody is the one character besides Danny that everyone loves to hate. She's a nightmare of a mother. And I think I do have a lot of parents read the series and they, you know, wonder how could one woman treat their daughter this way? You know, for these reasons that aren't really, you know, when you think of you being a parent, you think of being, you know, nurturing and raising a child to be a healthy adult, an independent adult. And Jody is just doing the exact opposite. So that I was surprised at how much people love to hate this woman. And she was just a blast to write.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I think now, even, you know, in the year that we are in, we have these in real life, these pop stars that are coming out and going like, this is what my life was really, really like, right? Like, I think Jeanette McCurdy set off a whole trend of like pop stars coming out and being like, this is what it was like behind the scenes for me. And this is really hard. So I think it will be really interesting for like your readers and our listeners to dive into a fictional story, right? But we can kind of get an inside look of what it's like to really be in that situation. Because I feel like if I speak for all millennials here, Sorry, but I right now I'm going to do it. I think we all were watching Disney Channel, right? Yeah. I think we all were like, yeah. I want to be Hannah Montana. I want to be Hilary Duff. I want to be Miley Cyrus. Like, I want to be Selena Gomez. Like, I want to be all these stars. I want to be Demi Lovato. But then you see them now,
yeah.
And you're like, wow, you went through a lot and you never let it show. And now it's all coming back and it's crumbling. Like, you're crumbling underneath all this pressure and all these things. So it's a really interesting and unique story. So I do want to circle back to you for just in a minute, Rachel. But before we do, Michelle, what is an Easter egg or something in your book that maybe readers won't get or listeners won't get until they're actually in the book?
I wrote the second book during the pandemic. So if you're reading the second book, it is travel heavy. Because you're stuck in a house, you're homeschooling, you can't go anywhere. And so there's a lot of detail in the cities that she's going to, a lot of fun facts that either I learned when I was traveling to these cities or just being on the internet trying to get out of my house virtually because I couldn't leave my house physically. So there's a lot of that. And then being a typical teenager, she just blows right through it because teenagers don't care about museums. They don't care about art or history, but it's fun for an adult who's traveled or whatever. They can remember that or they learn certain things about it. But as a teen traveling the cities, it all blew over her head. And she was more concerned about the clothes, the next appearance, her relationship issues, all that kind of thing. So it's almost a bit of a travelogue, that second book, in addition to journeying her concert tour.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I love that. And then, Rachel, I do want to go back to your series. What is something fun or an Easter egg? And it could be, I would think, in the first book or in any of the books as well, what is something fun that readers will not get until they are in the book itself?
So one of my readers recently told me that she didn't realize she was into spicy kitchen scenes until she read my books. And I apparently put one in every single book so far. So now it's just a thing. And we jokingly call it kitchen kink, which we were like, we didn't know this was a thing, but it is now. So I think maybe that's something that's kind of a fun Easter egg that
I love that.
At least that's what I'm hearing from readers. They're like, oh, I didn't realize this was a thing.
Yeah. People don't really think about the kitchen when it comes to spicy scenes and things like that. That's fun, though.
Yeah.
It should be one of those little tropes, like when you have a picture of your book and you have the little arrows and the different tropes, like spicy kitchen scenes.
Yeah. Well, and the big thing is that I think another play on this is that very often the guy is the one doing the cooking and kind of caretaking. And so, that's a big part of it is they're like, wow, a man cooking for me is, something that I really love. And that comes from the fact that my husband does the bulk of the cooking, I think. And so I'm like, yeah, I can't cook. I have somebody else do it. So I put that into my books. So as I'm working on the fourth one, I'm like, there has to be he has to be the cook. That's just a requirement now in all of my future books.
Yeah. Why fix it if it's not broken?
Exactly.
Oh, one thing I want to touch on as far as in your individual books, but as well as being, an indie author or maybe even a perspective from a traditional author, your book covers. Each one of you has such a unique book cover that I fell in love with immediately, but they're all so different from each other. So, Julie, I want to talk about your book cover. It is right here if anyone wants to see it.
Oh, there she is.
Absolutely stunning. It is beautiful. Where was the inspiration? How did you design this? And how did you know it was going to be the right choice as an indie author?
I'm very much for the idea of you can judge a book by its cover. I buy books by the cover, I'll see it and fall in love immediately. And so I really wanted a cover that would kind of give a little bit of the vibe of what to expect from the story. I worked with an amazing artist. I went through the traditional publishing route for a while, so I thought that I was not going to have any wording on the cover. And then when I decided to self-publish, I've been following her for a while on Instagram, so I got in touch with her and we started working on it. And I wanted something that felt like she was mid-daydream, right, in the cover because of the whole maladaptive daydreaming. Mm-hmm. And I found out that there is a flower, actually, that is called Cosmo Daydream. And I wanted to include that in the cover. So it's like her mind is fading away into daydream. And you have the continuation back of the book. That was the initial idea. Of course, the illustrator, Beatrice, she was amazing and she knocked it out of the park. I gave her the idea. I sent an audio note, 3 minutes, trying to explain the best as I could. And she came out with it, and I was in love with it.
And it was an artist that you found online, or did you already know this artist, or how did you find it? Because the reason why I'm asking is because I'm seeing on Threads, which I don't love Threads. I will be very honest about that. It's very stressful over there for me. A lot of authors are trying to find an artist to do their book art, but then they're not finding a responsible artist, or they're finding maybe someone who isn't truly doing what they say they're going to do. So how did you know that you picked the right artist, or were you able to fact check that again for like maybe authors who are looking for someone to design their book cover, but they want to make sure they're making the right choice?
Yeah, actually, my sister had worked with her before. She has two books. She self-published two books. So she told me, like, you should check her out. And initially I was like, maybe because my sister's book covers, they weren't exactly what I was thinking, but I was able to talk to her and she got it right away what I needed. So I did have, you know, her previous work to look into. And I was following her on Instagram for a while before I decided to go ahead and talk to her about it. So I saw all the work that she was doing, and she has a decent amount of followers, and everybody's always commenting on it. So I already kind of knew her. I knew she was going to be good. And people always ask me about the cover and always ask me about her. I'm always trying to, I'll send her Instagram so people can get in touch with her because she's amazing. And I know it is hard to find a good illustrator.
So Rachel, let's pop over to you and your cover. Your cover is so shadowy and it's mystical, but it's not a fantasy, right? It's like in it's real life, right? But where it has a lot of layers in it, and it really caught my eye, and I really liked it has a little pew pew on it. So where did you get this design? Did you design this yourself or did you hire an artist for this?
So I used to work for Central Michigan University, and there I became friends with an amazing graphic designer named Mel Purdy. We're still really close friends, and she's a big reader, too. And so I had her design this cover as well as my other two book covers. And when we sat down to talk about the cover of the book, I basically like gave her the whole plot, like all the spoilers, all the little Easter eggs in the book, all the little details. And so if you look closely, and it's going to be hard to see here, but if you're looking closely at it, you can see a ring here in the corner. So that's the ring that is in the book. You can see the road in the background. So there is a theme of crossing the line in a lot of my books, in all three of them so far. And so that indicates crossing the line. There's always some symbolism with the weapon. There's little texts here. There's a pair of cuffs, leather cuffs in the corner, as well as her cowboy boot because she wears cowboy boots. And so I described it all, and Mel came up with this really amazing cover for this book. And then same thing with book two, where I said, you know, I want a Damascus blade. I found a couple that I liked, told her the flowers. I wanted wildflowers because those are a part of the story. We ended up not doing all the layering. One, it's insanely expensive for her to spend the time to do all of the layering. And so I was like, I got to scale back the cost of these covers. So we went a little bit simpler for book two. And then book three, the really exciting thing about this is I couldn't find a hatchet that I liked, right? My husband had a hatchet that was his grandfather's. And so I took the photos of the hatchet myself, and that's embedded in it. And so, you know, now there's family heirlooms on the cover of my books. And so for me, it was really important to invest in a good cover because I have a background in marketing. I knew how important the cover was going to be. And when I'm at events, I have a large poster that has my covers on it, and it always draws people in. And so I think it was a worthy investment. I also had Mel do my chapter art. So every chapter has a little illustration with the character's name, which I think helps the reader switch between the different points of view. And so that follows through in all of my books. The girl is always like some sort of flower that goes into the book. And then the guy's is, you know, the hatchet or the Damascus blade or the gun. And so yeah, it's her. I'm the only person she's done a book cover for. You know, she designs for a university. She also does a lot of custom pet illustrations. So Positively Purdy, like PAW, is her Etsy store. But I've been encouraging her to put together packages for authors because I think she does such a phenomenal job with this. You know, even the back like follows through. And, you know, as an indie author, when you're uploading to all of the different, you know, KDP and Ingram and Book Vault, making sure that it uploads properly is really important, and I've never had a problem. And so it's also like just a mental relief to not have to worry about that aspect of indie publishing when you're working with a professional who does graphic design for a living.
They're absolutely stunning. It's so cool that you both were able to find someone that you could trust so quickly and that is outstanding. So I hope that other indie authors who are going to be listening to this are able to maybe work with one of those two artists, someone that they can trust, someone that they know they're going to get a good product from, and that's going to take so much stress off their plate, I feel like. And so, Michelle, I want to talk a little bit about your books because they're very different. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's a real person, right? That's an actual photo.
These are real photos, and a little bit of a glare right there, and they are different. And I will say, so I am ageted. But I'm with a very small publisher, and I was looking online. And technically, because my publisher is smaller, I'm considered in the indie world, even though I have an agent. And because my publisher is Rand Smith, and they're amazing over there. And they asked what the vision was for the, because he knew it was going to be a series, but for the first book, I hadn't written the other two yet. And so I said I wanted someone singing. And if you look at the covers, they get further and further away. So it's up close and personal. She's in the recording booth. She's singing. The second one, she's on stage, but she's still facing forward and you can see her. But on the third book, she's totally turned her back on the camera and she's all about the camera and the glitz and the lights. And that's kind of about Dani's journey throughout her career in a very short time where she just gets further and further away from herself and turns more and more towards the spotlight and everything becomes kind of blurry in the distance. And that says a lot about what she's going through. And that I was really, really grateful because I have heard with a lot of people when they do have a publisher, sometimes they don't get listened to at all. And I do feel that my publisher was able to give me the covers that I loved. The third cover was the only one we couldn't agree on. And that took a little bit of kicking around between the two of us. And we were able to figure it out. I actually had someone who helps me with my online posts, and she was able to come up with something because she jumped in and she just randomly put it together to help us out because we could not find the right picture. All the girls were either too old or they just didn't have the vibe of this carefree kind of like lost teen who's super, super just on top of the world right now. So I'm really, really pleased with how they turned out.
That's so cool. And it's so interesting that you were able to have like a real person on your cover, because I do feel like a lot of times when I see a real model or a photo of a real person on a book cover, it's usually like a reprint of a book when it went to a movie or a show. And it's like those actors on the book. And I hate to say it, but I don't like them. I'm so sorry. For anyone that likes them,
it's totally okay.
You put them on your shelves. But this one was different, right? Because it wasn't, you know, this is now a TV show and now it's going to be the actors on the book. But it was an actual like person that you went out and you found to make it to look like your character and bring your character more to life and bring them front and center. And it's really interesting because it feels like all three of you and your covers have Easter eggs all over them that are like woven within the story, which is incredible. So I love that you all put so much like thought and time and effort into that. That is outstanding. So as far as your guys' indie journeys, I kind of want to hone in a little bit on social media and marketing and how you guys are navigating that as authors, because I think that that is such a big part of your book becoming successful, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know. I think that's up to personal opinion. But how are you guys doing that? What are you guys doing online-wise to help your book? And do you feel like it's helping or do you feel like it's hindering more than it's helping? So, Julie, we can go ahead and start back with you.
So I started my TikTok. I'm very much a TikTok girly. So I do have an Instagram as well. But I started my TikTok when I was writing the book, right? So everybody was following along the whole journey. I got beta readers from my TikTok, and then I got two agents reaching out because of videos that went semi-viral. And it's been a really important part of the whole process of self-publishing. It's hard, though, because you need to be there and show up every day if you can. And having a full-time job, two kids, it's hard. And I personally, sometimes I get sick of social media, to be honest. It's hard to be there every day. The algorithm is TikTok. I feel like the algorithm knows exactly what you're looking for. But if you like even like one or two videos of something that might not put you in the best mental state, it will keep showing up. So, and I try to be really honest with my community. And I think that's part of
why I built such a strong community on TikTok. And I try to be honest and say, like, I'm trying to document as much as I can. And I want to be here. I want to talk to you guys. But sometimes it's hard. Like the first week after the book was released, I tried to answer to every DM. And there were people, wonderful people, telling me their life story. And I was so excited. And I would cry every time that I went on TikTok and I read the DMs. And that took a toll, to be honest. And then I had to kind of go, you know, I had some posts ready to go, but I wouldn't go onto TikTok and scroll or look into any DMs for like a week or two to kind of recuperate from that. So it's great. It's where I found my people. And I think it's really important for indie authors to be online and to build that community in whatever platform you feel the most comfortable in. But it is also kind of hard. Yeah, to do it all by yourself. Yeah.
I think that's fair. As an indie author, is there a point in it where you are going to be like, well, I need to, you know, because they have like PAs that I don't know at what point, you know, an indie author goes and gets a PA, but are you to that point yet? Or do you think that's something that's in your new future? Or do you feel like as an indie author, that's something that you will kind of push off for a while?
I'm actively looking into it right now because I'm writing my second book. And again, I have kids, I have a full-time job. So, and I know how important it is to keep posting consistently on social media, but I don't want to lose that contact with my people there. Like I want to answer some of the DMs. I want to, you know, answer the comments and I want to have stories telling a little bit about my day and things that usually won't go into like the main videos and the reels and the For You page, but having the story and having that contact with my community. But definitely something that I'm going to need help with soon. Yeah.
It's amazing. So there's a lot of PAs out there. So I feel like in that community too, there are lots of people to vouch for others. So I think that finding a PA should hopefully be a pretty easy process or an easy journey as someone who does not have a PA. So I don't know. I could be wrong, but I feel like whenever an author is on like, hey, I'm looking for a PA or I'm ready to get a personal assistant, you know, and then people are just like, hey, this girl does amazing or this girl does amazing or this person does awesome. So hopefully it is a very easy transition. So Rachel, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your social media journey and your marketing journey, because you had mentioned you have been in marketing, right? Or have done marketing in the past. So did that help you when you were doing your social media journey for your series?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is in social media. I've taught at Central Michigan University, and I'll be teaching at Michigan State this fall, social media and content courses. And so I have really deep expertise, have, you know, worked on the corporate side all the way up to the vice president level. So like I come in with foundations that apply to corporations, startups, higher education, K-12. So the foundations for marketing, I think, are similar in the book space, but a little bit different. And so I'm constantly applying what I know there into my website, my email marketing, and my social media. And it's, for me, it's really about trying different things and seeing what sticks. So I have been doing a lot of trial reels. Last month, I really dedicated a lot of time and energy to doing trial reels, and I hit a record sales for my KDP, as well as record sales at events. And so something is finally clicking. It's finally working. I had a couple posts do extremely well. You know, usually like a trial reel gets like 200 views if you're lucky, right? I had one that hit 100K and I was like, again, kitchen scenes. I don't know. I do content polls with kitchen scenes and they outperform everything else. So I was like, apparently like this is just my space. So you'll see probably a lot more of that in my social media content. But I think I also am really systematic because this is what I do for a living. I now run my own marketing consultancy, working primarily with K-12 higher ed and startups. And so I personally use Asana to have all my social media content calendar in there. And then I just kind of can quickly copy and paste straight from my phone. When I think about the fact that I need to post content, sometimes it's at 9 p.m. at night because I've forgotten all day. And I'm also trying to do more content that just helps people get to know me as a person because I was doing a lot of content polls. I launched a street team and my street team members were like, you should talk more about your personal story and
more about where these characters came from. And so I've been doing a little bit more of that, which is a lot of fun, but also a little bit more vulnerable than I typically like to get. But I think it absolutely does help that I have a background in this. But it, at the same time, like, organic social media is a slog. Like, unless you're putting ad dollars behind it, it is all about just slow gains versus virality. And so it's just like consistently putting out good content that engages people and knowing that like 75% of it will probably not go super far, but it's still maybe 100 people who didn't know about my book before. And that seems to be paying off.
So with that background that you have, if you could give one piece of marketing advice to a brand new indie author just launching their account, what would you say to them?
Think networking, building your network. The friends that I've made in the indie space are people who advocate for me, who share my book for free. You know, they're not asking for anything. They're not asking me to throw them free books to promote. They're just talking about my books because they genuinely support me. And that's also in the bookstore space. Like, I've befriended bookstore owners and I've gotten to know them really well. And that's how I'm getting my books into bookstores, is just really being a real person and not just constantly pushing my own book, but also promoting the books of other indie authors.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I feel like indie bookstores are such a big thing right now, thankfully. And I think our community is working really hard together to lift them up and bring them up, whether it's a brick and mortar indie bookstore or an online bookstore. I know we have a couple, like the Goodish Girls have a couple bookstores that we love to uplift. I mean, we'll uplift as many as we can, but a few specific ones that I'm always like tagging them in things like, hey, this pre-order is happening, or making sure that if I am going to get a book, I try to pre-order from them or get it from them if I can. So I feel like our community is working so hard to bring them up in front and center, which is amazing. And I'm so grateful for every single indie bookstore that we have in this world. Thank you, indie bookstores.
I think one of the most important things you can do to make yourself successful as an indie author is to just build relationships and support with your fellow indie authors, as well as bookstores. Because the friendships that I've made with fellow authors or book influencers, they've really helped amplify my book to audiences I would have never reached. And so taking that relationship first and promoting each other is just really helpful.
Michelle, I want to talk about you and your marketing journey, because you are a little bit different. Would you consider yourself a hybrid author? Because I know that you said you're traditionally published, but it's with a small publisher. So you're in the indie world, essentially. So would you consider that like hybrid-ish?
It is a weird spot because I'm not. Because my publisher takes care of all my costs. So that makes me traditional. But because, you know, my publisher has a bunch of clients, my agent has a bunch of clients, a lot of the marketing falls to me, just right, like an indie. So I will say there, it's a lot of people think you have an agent and a publisher. That's amazing. But unless you're, you know, Stephen King or someone super huge, there's no like PR book tour or anything like that. You are still hustling just like as if I had self-publishing on top of that, you know, because you guys are doing so much work as self-published authors, the formatting, the editing, the everything. And then on top of it, marketing, because it's exhausting enough to come up with the idea, write the book, then you got to do everything else on top of it, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I do that as well. And while I will, you know, bounce something off my agent and, you know, do you think I should do this? Do you want to do that? You know, what would the Rand Smith think if I did that? I am constantly scouring. Like when Rachel was talking, I'm like taking notes and listening because I'm learning. So I learn every single day. Every time I go on the internet, I'm looking to see what people are doing. I'm reading the acknowledgements and seeing what people are doing in their acknowledgements. So it's a constant hustle. And I just wanted to like pull the curtain back on that, because it is, when you do have an agent, it opens up a lot of things, but you still a lot of times are on deck for everything else. And I think people don't have that. They don't know that. So mm-hmm. I'm still trying to do the same thing as you. And then one thing I'll say, I definitely agree with Rachel, befriending as many and truly friending. Like I have people who I'm messaging all the time now. I've never met them, but you just develop these bonds because you're going through the same thing. And it's so emotional to be a writer. You're just like ripping your heart out and like putting on a page and hoping people don't trash it. And so yeah. It's really, really vulnerable, really emotional. I don't like to do a ton of like talking videos. I can get very tongue-tied. I get very nervous even for stuff like this. Like I don't sleep well, whatever. It's just not my bag. I'd like to write and not have to talk to anyone if I could. But so an engagement online has really, really helped me. And I engage across all fields with all different genres because it helps, just because I write YA. I'm not sticking to one genre. I exchange with reviews. I promote all the people who I follow, like reels and reposts, because I think that helps. But one thing I've found that has given me an opportunity, which I don't know if people know about or not, is I bounced off my agent, was entering award shows. So a couple in particular, the Book Fest, the Independent Press Awards, and it's actually Independent Press Awards, not with the, because that's the bigger one. And then the New York Big Book Festival. All of those have given me, because I entered and I won in different categories, I now have opportunities to go to the LA Book Fest. So I just went through the three times. So, and that's what I don't think people realize. So I just wanted a full disclosure. It can be pricey to enter an award show. They all have varying prices. You have to make sure you're not entering an award show and basically buying a title for an award. You really want to make sure. I've certainly entered award shows and not won. And that's how I know it's legitimate, because if everyone enters and wins. So I will say it can give you that little bit of legitimacy, which is really, really weird. But people will like either see a gold sticker or you say, I won an award, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, well, that should make it shouldn't make a difference. But for some people, it does. So if I can nab those few more readers by doing that and then get to go to the LA Book Festival, I went to the American Library Association, went to the AWP convention out here. I've been to all kinds of different places because of these award shows, and not every award show has this opportunity, but I highly recommend that if you're looking to, because festivals, again, a huge, people love to see pictures of you at the festival. I made connections. I was able to be interviewed by someone else that had a really wild audience, big audience, because I was at the festival. So I highly recommend that. Definitely those three have been really, really helpful, those contests for me. So, but I don't think you're ever done marketing. I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly trying to figure stuff out. And I wish when I first started, I was barely online building my platform with my first book. And now I wish I could almost go back and release my first book, because there's so much that I've learned. But I will say, I mean, it's come out 6 years ago this October and it's still selling. So I will say that a lot of times I feel like there's an expiration date on books. Mm-hmm. Because you feel like, oh, if it came out last year, 2 years ago, you can't sell it. All of my books are still selling, you know, and one of them is six years old. And I will say, it's just, I keep pushing it, and I'm still writing new stuff, but I'm still pushing it just as if it came out last month.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if you keep it front and center, if you keep it as the main attraction, then, you know, people are going to see it and hopefully people are going to be interested by it.
Yeah.
Our podcast we've only been around for a year, so we're still fairly small. We're growing, right? We're building those connections. We're doing these things, but I try to get online. And even though I am very much an introvert in real life, I try to wake up and pretend that we have like a million followers. And I'm like, yes, we're doing it. Even though for like the seven people, I don't know, the 10 people that are watching.
But that's how you get to a million, is exactly. Treating every reader I have, I am so grateful for. Every time something happens, and I'm sure Julie and Rachel, you guys are the same, it is like a really big deal and it's a celebration, because at the end of the day, we're the only ones defining our success. So I am constantly moving my goalposts, and every time something happens, like I hit a milestone with sales or I, you know, achieve something else, that is cause for a huge celebration. You'll see my thing. I'll post, oh, I sold a book last week. One book, but yeah, that's a big celebration. Obviously, if I sell more, then I'm really excited. But I think that, and like Rachel was saying, I encourage everyone that I'm in touch with online and I have those interactions, because that lifting them up isn't stealing from my spotlight. And then they'll lift me up and maybe they'll lift up someone else. And I found on Instagram, that's where I mostly do, because TikTok, I can't, it befuddles me. But I feel like the more people you interact with, truly, it's just growing, and it's such a positive environment. I haven't had a lot of negativity, knock on wood, with my experience there. And it's been really, really helpful on multiple levels, getting questions answered, getting a little bit of support when I'm feeling down, you know, that kind of thing. It's been really nice.
That's incredible. Thank you guys so much for giving our listeners and future authors this information, because I feel like it's the marketing and social media is so front and center right now that it's almost inevitable. Like you kind of have to do it. So at least if you're going to do it, right, see if we can get some pointers and some tips to help make it more comfortable, because it can be uncomfortable to put your face on camera, to try and talk about your book, to talk about how many books you sold, you know, to talk about your story and your personal experience. So I appreciate that you guys are still in that journey and going through that and pushing through those hard times. So I want to talk about what is next for you guys. What is next for you as authors? Do you have another book coming? You know, what do you have another story that you're writing? So Julie, what is next for you? What are you
so, up to? So, Maladaptive is coming as an audiobook, July. Yay. So, around the time that this will go live. So, that's exciting to hear the story.
Yeah.
And I'm writing my second book right now. So I'm documenting everything on my social media. I'm always looking for beta readers to help me out. So yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
So if someone wanted to become a beta reader for you, what is the best way for them to do that?
I do have a form on the link in my bio, both for Instagram and TikTok. So just go put your name, email, that's it. And then when I'm ready to send to beta readers, I'll send an email and ask who's too interested and who has the time to do it. And then I'll select a few from there.
Yeah, amazing. And for our listeners, if you are interested in becoming a beta reader for Julie, I'm going to link that in our show notes. So that way you guys can just scroll right below, click it, and then submit that form and make it easy for you guys. Because Maladaptive is a beautiful story. It's going to be amazing. I'm not done with it. Like I said, not done. But I'm in and out. Everything about it is amazing. So that's very exciting. Rachel, what is next for you in your series? You have, obviously, your book comes out very soon. Yeah. And then what happens after that?
Yeah. So I'm in the stages of finalizing the audiobook. So listening to my own book is a process. And that's audiobook production is a whole episode in itself. I've decided to write a holiday, I think it's going to be a novella, maybe kind of just a short story, but it's going to be Eva and Reaper focused. And because I get a lot of people asking for more Eva and Reaper, and with them being book one, they're still in books two and three, but they're not the focus. And then I am probably going to start writing Fuse and the Phoenix, which is book four in July. So I'm just giving myself a little bit of a break because I have found when you're writing dual POV, or in the case of book two, it's three POV. You need a bit of a break to change voices in your head and change just the characteristics of the characters. And so I need a little bit of space to get away from the characters of book three and stop thinking like them and start thinking about the next group of characters. So I'm getting really close to doing that. I've taken a little bit of a different approach with this third book, though, that comes out on June 20th. I chose to only do arcs with my street team. And so that's just a decision that I made from a business perspective that I'm kind of narrowing the people who I'm working with just because it's a lot of work to manage arcs. So, you know, if people are looking to anything of mine, they actually have to join my street team and kind of commit to being a broader part of my community. So I think it's a little bit of a risk that I'm taking as an indie author, because I think it's almost like an expectation that you're doing arcs widely for everyone. And I've narrowed that a bit. And so far, I have no regrets.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the best parts I feel like is that I've learned of being an indie author is you have that freedom. You don't have to put out arcs. You don't have to put out audio arcs. You can just give them to your street team because it's your book and it's your story and you have control of it, right? So it's whatever you want to do and it's your choice, right? And I think if you have the right street team, then it can do really, really well. And for those, if you're, you know, for our listeners, if you're wondering, like, what is a street team? What is it like to be on a street team? We do have previous episodes with other indie authors on Indie Talk talking solely about how to make a street team, how to pick people for your street team, how to do all of that stuff. So make sure you guys go check that out. And then Rachel, if someone wanted to join your street team, is there a link that you have on your page that they can fill out to apply for that?
Yeah. So if you go to my link tree on any of my social media channels, you'll find a link to apply. And I'm not choosing people based off of follower counts or anything like that. It's more about your vibes and your passion for my books. And we have a fun little Slack. I probably should listen to the street team episodes because I've made it up completely and I have no idea what I'm doing, but my street team seems to enjoy it. I have like an NC theme, so you can like rise in the ranks. You start as a prospect and you can rise up. I overcomplicated it with a spreadsheet where that tracks points. It is way overcomplicated. But you know, so far it's been a lot of fun to have like this group of people who are as excited about the characters as I am and getting their questions and their like requests of stories that they want next. And there's some that I'm like, I'm sorry, but Thane will never get his own story because he's based off of my dad. So like, so that's another Easter egg. Thane is based, the president of the club is based off of my dad. He is not going to get his own little love story.
Not getting a story.
Ever. Like, no.
Dreams are being crushed in real life for your street team right now.
For sure.
That's wild. Amazing. So
If you guys are interested, if our listeners are interested in joining Rachel's street team for her motorcycle romance, I'm going to link that in our show notes as well. So again, easy to drop down, click the link, and then you can submit, and then you can be a prospect and rise in the ranks. So Michelle, what is next for you? We're still in the YA kind of zone. Is that correct? And that's where we're staying?
Myself, genre fluid, because I've written two books in a new trilogy. I don't know why I keep writing trilogies, but... And it's not YA, it's contemporary comedy women's fiction. And I'm waiting to see if I can get that published. It's about a woman who discovers a big family secret and her whole life is ripped apart, but it's a comedy. And then I actually have circled back and I'm writing a prequel about Jody, which is Danny Trueheart's mom, main character. Yeah, so it's her as a teenager and how she became a stage mom. So it follows her. And so you get to meet her as a teenager. Yeah. And because, again, it's all that backstory that got ripped out of the book initially, ripped out of Rising Star. And so I have a lot of it already together. And I'm already I'm starting my sixth chapter. And it's so much fun to write because she's, you know, she doesn't start out as the evil Hellcat that she is in Rising Star. And so it's fun to kind of to rip those layers away and see who she is before she becomes that. So I think people are going to like it because she is by far the character I get the most comments on. And they're all negative, but in the best way possible. So I'm very excited about that.
That will be interesting because that's going to be a hard one for readers to be like, do I like her? Do I sympathize with her? Right?
And it's going to be hard because all of my books are a clean read. And it was a choice I made because I wanted to make sure because my youngest reader was 11. My oldest was 97. So I wanted to make sure I could reach as many readers possible. And so I took that parental consideration in mind. But in this new story, which is tentatively called Thirsty, but I don't know if that is the proper term for that time period. So I need to look up that. So, but again, she, you know, obviously, she has some things happening. So I feel like I don't know if I can make this one a clean read, but it won't be incredibly spicy because it is a teen book. So it's all relatively clean. But I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep it how it's going to work out yet. I'm still trying to figure that aspect of it out. But it's been a lot of fun and it's fun to revisit these characters because, you know, when you write a character for a couple of books, you really get used to it and you miss them. So I'm really happy to be back in Jody's world, at least for a little bit.
That's going
to
be so much fun. That was amazing. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. This was one of the best indie talks I think I've ever been on. I learned so much. Hopefully our listeners learn more and hopefully any future authors who are listening to this got some advice out of it. And if you guys have questions, reach out. Like, we're always willing to help you connect with other indie authors and other traditional authors so that way you guys can find your way as well in writing your stories. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please make sure to like and subscribe to our channel, especially because this month, we are dedicating this whole month to Indie Talk. So we're going to have a new Indie Talk episode every single week in the month of July. Thank you guys so much.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.